Hi, and welcome to NARC, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborators, home to NARC Troopers. If you enjoy today's podcast or want to find other resources, please check out my website, narctroopers.com. Today, I am giddy. I am beside myself. I am tickled pink because I have one of my favorite people in the whole world here with me, and I don't know what I did to get the karma to get him to join me today, but he is here. Yes. And it is the wonderful, brilliant Robert Torbay. Now, for those...
Thank you.
Yes, yes. And so thank you so much for joining me today.
I think it was your persistence.
Well, I am a rabid fan. If you lived closer, I might be a groupie and have to send you cookies or something, you know, to show my appreciation or something like that, because I have learned so much from you. And I like to think that I'm a writer, and that I have sort of writer's chops, that a lot of people that you see on Quora and Facebook and Medium and different platforms, you can tell they're not writers. But you have the gift of the pen, so that when you try to find your words, they just flow out so beautifully. And I, as a fellow writer, just really respect that a great deal. So let me just say, Robert Torbay is one of the biggest, most prolific writers on the Quora platform. And there are quite a few people who think that Quora is the end all of everything when it comes to narcissistic abuse and narcissistic abuse recovery, because there's so many people who have something to say about that on there. And the reason that Mr. Torbay is such an excellent first choice, popular go-to person is because he's one of the ones that not only is a good writer, but he has insight and knowledge about this topic that is rare to see. So let's begin, and I'm going to hand you the mic. And I think my first question, my first burning question that I would like to ask is, when you write about narcissistic abuse and recovery from it, and you share the things that you do, do you have an intention or a goal of what you think your mission is in writing this this material?
I tend to get sort of interested in a theme, and then I will often just kind of, you know, keep going on that theme until I've exhausted it. So it's kind of like, I feel like if I externalize what I'm thinking, I've got a better chance of being able to see it and understand it. Whereas if it stays inside myself, it's very murky. If I can put it out there, it just gives me an opportunity to understand it. And maybe, you know, I might get some feedback from others, and I might think, yeah, maybe I'm on the right path here. But what's my purpose? I don't know, I guess. It's just perhaps I have obsessive compulsive disorder, and I just like to, you know, I get hooked on a thing, and so I'm just going to do it until I exhaust it. That's probably about as close as I could get to my creative process.
I guess what I'm wondering is, how do you know so much about this subject?
I suppose I would. I just imagine that I'm in a cluster B family. I could be wrong. Perhaps I just have a very good imagination. I'm not sure, or an imagination that resonates. It's just, yeah, I can't really, I don't know why that it resonates with other people. I'm glad it does. I don't know why. I just assume that I am probably from somewhat of a cluster B family. I guess that would be the reason why I'm interested in this topic. I suppose. And, you know, I've always found myself attracted to the, you know, the charming and the psychopathic and the, you know, yeah, the charming, the daring, the brave, the foolhardy.
Yes, I think that is the pattern, and that is how we fall into that, is that it comes from where we came from. And if we revisit our early formative years, some toxic scripting or faulty programming took place that sort of hardwired us to need that very intense connection with another person. And let's just face it, relationships with healthy, neurotypical, normal people are very vanilla and bland for people who have whatever it is that some of us have after coming out of families like this. It just falls short. And it's almost as if we have a thirst for that exceptionally over the top kind of disordered person. Only they can bring it. I find that to be one of the most disturbing things about this whole thing. It's not as if we're just victims, and I know you write about that a lot too, that we need, as people who have been in these relationships, we need to empower ourselves and take control and just do what we need to do and not just wallow in the whole victimhood thing.
Yeah, I don't see the point of being a victim. I don't talk about my narcissist or my narcissist ex, or they don't belong to me. I don't belong to them. It didn't, was it a relationship? I don't know. It was what it was. I just don't feel that one ought to make these people so significant in your life by saying they're my narcissist or my. I just find that kind of familiarity or that closeness disturbing. It's like someone talking about my gonorrhea or my syphilis, and I've just had the most interesting discharge, and let me tell you about it. I just don't want to know if that's the relationship you have with it. It's a disease, it's a pathology, and it should be treated as such. And so I aim to perhaps offer some techniques and tools that have worked for me or so far, that can be used to manage such people, as I feel you can only ever manage them. You never get anywhere, really.
This is true. And I like what you say about treating it as if it's a disease and not something that you own, but something that has infected you, perhaps, that you have to purge out of yourself, or something, that you have to heal from it and detox from it and get it out. And I've noticed that in your writings, when you refer to the narcissist, you use the pronoun our narcissist instead of my narcissist, which drives that point
Oh, look,
home.
I'll snatch your narcissist from you. I'll take your narcissist from you. They don't belong to you. I'm going to take them. I'll take them. Don't worry about that.
Exactly, because they belong to no one ever.
They belong to the highest bidder gets them. It's an eternal auction.
Yes.
So, you just got to keep upping the bid. There's never, the gavel never comes down. There's just someone who's ahead at the time,
I think that's keen insight because I, for one, have noticed that every transaction with them is transactional. It's give and take. What do I get out of this?
Well, to be honest, someone like the word transactional, I feel has been dirtied. Like I see nothing wrong with transactions. I feel that's the best way to run one's life. Like if I give you something, you ought to give me something. Otherwise, there's going to be resentment built up. A narcissist does an unfair transaction in which you think you're getting something, but you get something else. Or I guess you could argue that deep down you have subconscious drives, which I would buy. So you could argue that you really do want to be abused, and that's what it's about. It's about digging into that. So I would buy that as a transaction, but I just feel the word has been slightly sullied. That's just my opinion about it. I think,
Well, I can understand
I think
that.
transactions are conditional love is where it's at. I think, if you're going to abuse me, that's it. It's over. I think it's good to get, being Robert Torbay, a little bit contrarian here, but I think it's actually good to have a transactional relationship. Like, you got to pull your weight, otherwise it's not going to work out. You know what I mean? Like,
I do. You don't want a one-way street where one person is the giver and the other person is the taker.
Yeah. Which I wouldn't call that a transaction. That's theft or slavery. You know what I mean? So, I've heard that word transactional, but I always encourage people to just challenge the words that you hear. You know, everyone buys it lock, stock, and barrel. You know, they adapt or they adopt, rather, all this terminology. And I think if you just go by your own common sense, you can cut through some of that crap. And the narcissist goes from being this alien creature to that kid at school who was kind of a cry bully, that sort of, you know, the kid that was, you know, you can kind of see who they are, or that sibling who acted like the real cool one in front of everyone else. But you knew at home what they were like. And if anyone touched their hair gel, they'd have a tantrum. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think if we humanize it, we have a better chance of grasping what's going on. That's my personal feeling on it.
I think that a lot of people demonize narcissists and vilify them and make them into some huge, larger-than-life villain. When, in fact...
Oh, they're a villain. They're a villain. I definitely think they're a villain. They're just a minor villain, like the, you know, the buffoon and the henchman. You know, the idiot henchman is kind of, or the jail guard. You know what I mean? The stupid guard that's got the hero trapped in the jail. They're just like a minor villain. I definitely do see them as something demonic and villainous, though. Just kind of low grade. So,
because can you expand that a little bit more? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, what they do is wrong and evil and cannot be justified. There's no justification for it. I don't see any justification for what they do. But as you say, you know, it's kind of like Louis Pasteur once said, so tangential here perhaps, but Louis Pasteur once, on his deathbed, he agreed that it wasn't the virus that kills, it's the terrain. So you look at someone with HIV, for example, or full-blown AIDS, who has no immune system, they're going to be killed by the common cold. Whereas someone with a vigorous immune system, they might get sick, they might not. So in the same way, I see the narcissist. If you are very strong and you're about your business, you will just brush them off, or you will dodge them, or you will say, look over there, and then you will dash, or you will flatter them. And you know, I see them as minor henchmen.
I see. I think that I like to think about it in these terms, that if they are so damaged, broken, mentally not unwell, you know, they're not well, that, you know, with all these things that are wrong with them, I think, do they have free will to be able to choose to be the bad guy or evil? Clearly they do evil things, but are they intrinsically evil? I also think that mentally ill people can draw sort of demonic forces to them like a magnet, because what better host for some little demony thing to camp out in the body of a narcissist who is totally self-indulgent and all about himself? And, you know, that does seem like a good place to come in and take over or something. But here's a question for you. If someone is mentally incapable of managing themselves, if they're just, they just don't get it, they're living in an alternate reality, they're delusional, they have magical thinking, they're just, you know, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, can you hold them responsible for the evil they do?
Or yes, you must. You must. I mean, it's a bit like, I'll use an analogy I've already made before, but it's a bit like you have a driver and they've now run over 20 people in their life or more. They've had 20 accidents involving people, and there's always an excuse. And it's a pathetic excuse. You know, I didn't see them. Or what was that pregnant lady doing pushing her pram straight at me? Or my driving instructor never told me how to avoid groups of school children when I was drunk. You know, it's just like they do what they do, whether or not they are morally ill or morally not ill. What they do is aggressive and dangerous. And I would like to say, though, that a narcissist will kill you. Sure, if you're weak enough, they will grind you down. A narcissist will look for people who are suicidal and attempt to date them. I mean, these people will kill you if you're weak. I would like to say that, yeah, sure, they can grind you to nothing and slowly kill you. Just really slowly kill you. And they will if you're weak. So I think that really it depends on one's own strength and one's own power as to how much damage they will do to you. But I believe they could destroy you and enjoy it because that's what they are. I was looking at some research about how their brain works and how the self-esteem part or one's thoughts about oneself and the reward center are not connected. So it doesn't matter if they say, hey, you're all right, or hey, look, you're doing great things to themselves. It's not going to make them feel any better. Mm-hmm. So they have to go and do what they do. Is there free will? Is there not free will? I don't know. They say that it is the personality disorder with the highest genetic component. So it's quite possible they're just born with maybe, for all we know, it could be entirely genetic. I have no idea. But they're just born with underdeveloped empathy. It just doesn't fire. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's a lot harder for them to empathize. I don't really know. And I think that whether or not it's free will, you know, yeah, it's a bit like a rabid dog. It's going to bite you. You just have to act accordingly around the narcissist. Leave questions of free will up to them. And you have to actually, you have to be prepared to stand on their little fingers at times and just hurt them a little bit. You know, you've just got to be a little bit hurty sometimes. I think that's it. You know, you just kind of snob them a little bit or grandstand a little bit. You know, you just put a little bit of pain on them when they're messing with you. You can't treat them compassionately, unfortunately. I don't think so. I think it's a kind of tough love.
Yes,
so
I agree with that.
I'm not quite sure if that answers the free will question, but it's kind of like it's a wild animal. You know, it's like a feral cat. Just be careful. You know, never trust it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, never trust it. Don't afford it the things you would afford normal people. So whether or not it's free will or, you know, whether they are a different race or, you know, you could say they are, you know, a different species within a species. I really don't know. And that's not my lookout. My lookout is how do you deal with these creatures? How do you deal with them?
Yes.
What do you do when you encounter one?
Well, you
that's
can't
what's important.
You can't take it personally. I know that because it isn't personal. It isn't about you. They just need to feed like the predators that they are. And that's what animals do.
If a wild dog comes at me, I will take it personally in that I will kill it. You know what I mean? I'm not saying kill your narcissist. That's really not what I'm saying. I never suggest that. What I am saying, though, is you take countermeasures, and you take countermeasures until the threat has gone. You don't need to overstate it. But, you know, is it personal? Is it not personal? It feels personal because they're going for your gizzards and your guts, and they want to tear your heart out, and they want to destroy you. They want to find out what you love and destroy it. So, I mean, is it personal? Would they do it to someone else? Yeah, they're going to do it to everyone else. It's going to feel personal, and whether or not you take it personally, again, I think it's up to you. But you have to manage them. You know, you just have to manage them. Don't let them get the leg over.
What you said about them being lethal and deadly is very true, that a lot of people don't realize this. They use the term so freely to describe anyone and everyone. Oh, he's a narcissist, she's a narcissist. Mm. But and these people most often are not narcissists. They're just not nice people. But the true narcissist, I, you know, in the last 3 years since I had my I was discarded at that time 3 years ago, I have been in support groups with people who did commit suicide, two of them. Two different ones. And I also had other people in the group who would sit down and say, it's kind of like going to AA or NA or GA or one of those Alcoholics Anonymous kind of meetings. And you know, hello, my name is Lily. I've had this happen to me. And some of the people in the group have been struggling and stuck with PTSD, panic disorder, anxiety attacks, just being completely neurochemically dysregulated, adrenal fatigue. They've just completely collapsed and crumbled and can't function as normal people. And they've been
Yes.
this way. For some of them, I was shocked. It was like 8 years, 9 years, 10 years, 11
Wow.
years ago, 12 years ago. I thought, good grief, is that going to happen to me? Am I going to still be struggling to recover from this for the next 10 years? Because that's horrifying, right? To give up that much of your life to try to get
I
over
think
one of these
so.
people.
I think so. And I think a lot of the problem is people, maybe it is, they attribute a lot of things to the narcissist, which are not there. If you could see them for what they are, this kind of skeletal creature that has a flesh suit, but inside is ravenous. I think, yeah, I suppose it's like, it is personal and it's not. I mean, they go for whatever you care about. So that feels personal. I suppose the thing about me is I have a level of aggression inside me, and I just won't allow anybody to do that to me. I won't. I just won't do it. I'm just not going to allow somebody to become the focus of my life because I just won't. I'm not going to do that. When I have had, relationships with narcissists, the romantic ones have never lasted very long at all. The friendships have lasted a lot longer because I was a lot younger. And I didn't know what, I didn't understand. But now I have this level of aggression, and I think that's crucial. You've got to get a little bit angry. Again, people take what I say the wrong way, like I'm saying, shoot your narcissist. That's not the answer. There's too many of them, and you'll go to jail, and you'll meet creatures that are far worse than narcissists.
Yes.
So, again, deal with them. Learn how to deal with them, learn how they work. Don't worry too much about trying to change them. Again, trying to heal them is a dead-end street. You're not Otto Kernberg. Leave it alone. You know what I mean? Like, that's a man who's dedicated his life to it. I
Yes,
don't know what his success rate
we're.
was. Maybe it's 10%, 5%. It doesn't sound like it's great from what he said. Like, it's a real, it's really hard to get anywhere with them. So you, as a person with post-traumatic stress disorder, are certainly not equipped. You are the last person. You are like a steak sandwich trying to heal a pit bull. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
You're going to entertain him for a little while. So I guess with me, I have a level of anger, and also I have a religious aspect to myself. So that's what I attach to, not people. I attach to a religious code. I mean, I'm allowed to, and so are you, and everyone's entitled to do that. And I would suggest that you attach to a spiritual code, something involving the natural world and the beauty of nature, and that you move out of the human world. Because if you remain in the human world and you think, okay, I didn't win this round, but I'll put the coin in the slot machine again and I'll do a little jig this time and that's going to work. You know what I mean? I think the answer is not to be found in the human world. It's not to keep going on about relationships. And I'm very adverse to even the word healing. And inner child, don't talk to me about that. It doesn't exist. it should have, there should be an inner adult in there somewhere. That's what we need to find, is the inner adult who says, that's just silly. We're not playing with that person. Or, you know what I mean? The inner adult says, no,
I
that's
think
bullshit
the
behavior.
thing that you
Have
have in
bricks back.
common, the thing that you have in common with so many mental health professionals and therapists and even my personal guru that I love very much is Dr. Sam Vaknin.
Oh, yeah, he's cool. I'm big ups to Sam.
Do you know
Big up.
him?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I devoured his work when I sort
Me
of started off
too.
with, toxic relationship, and then it came on to something called an empath. I thought, oh, maybe I'm an empath. That sounds cool. And then, I sort of hit Sam Vaknin. He's Jewish. I got a lot of love for the Jews, especially. A midrash, I believe that's the correct word, where you take something and you create a story from it. So yeah, I think, I've got a lot of respect for Sam. I don't agree with some things, that's cool. But yeah, and so what does Sam Vaknin say? What,
He
sorry, I
says
sort of
that
bored you.
all of us need to be complete, whole and functioning individuals with ourselves, by ourselves, for ourselves, within ourselves, outside ourselves, just ourselves. We should not be depending on anyone else to complete us, to validate us, for any of
Yes.
that. That we need to be able to be completely self I guess we could fill in the blank, self-validating, self-affirming, and so that we find through ourselves and through perhaps something greater than ourselves, some direction, some meaning or purpose that has nothing to do with other people, which is kind
yeah,
of a
cool. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, yeah. I definitely think there's an expression in Māori, which is the they are the indigenous people of this country, and they say, without a vision, the people perish. And I really think if you don't have a vision, you're not going to escape the narcissist. Because if your life is about romance, if your life is 100% about romance and love and finding somebody, I think you're going to drown. That's kind of my feeling about that. I feel that you've got to have something else that drives you. It's just, you know, so when I'm by myself, what do I do? You know, I'm a crazy person. This is how I see it. This is really how I see it. I'm a sketchy, erratic, odd, crazy person. And that's fine. Probably I'll always be like this. I kind of always have been like this. But it's better if I spend time alone, because I fight with people. And I meet people that are not suitable. It's better if I'm by myself. What am I going to do to entertain myself? I'm going to build things. I'm going to learn things. I'm going to write. So it's kind of like I'm going to find activities that are good for me. I'm going to find healthy things to do to entertain myself and channel myself. Like, you know, I sort of wonder about healing. You know, maybe there's no healing. What if we can say there is no healing? You will not heal. You were born like this. Worst case scenario, it's genetic. And maybe you've just got to face the right way. Like, use what you are in the best way that you can. So if you're an odd, weird person, go for it. What can you do with that? Take yourself, you know, to some extent away from people, and a dirty word, psychopathy, become a little bit psychopathic about it, a little bit one-minded, a bit obsessed, a bit, you know, over-focused, a bit, you know, that's how I did the Quora. Just, I became obsessed. I was just going to find the answer. I'm just going to plow into it. You know, nearly 3 years now, 5 answers a day, I'm going to get, you know, I'm just going to get good at it.
And you have. I haven't read your early work, but I know that what the content
trash.
That you create now.
Two words.
Let
Why
me
does
tell
a narcissist
you.
Do this?
Yeah.
Who cares? You know what I mean? Like, what is a narcissist, blah, 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 narcissists are dicks. I mean, there's plenty of Quora writers who are still like that, and I began like that.
Yes. I this transformation you have, through your obsession, honed your craft. And so that now it is beautiful writing that says something meaningful. And it's just as great. Your message is great, but the way that you craft it is where the beauty lies with that. That, like I said initially, as a writer, I see that and think, wow, you know, he should write a book. He's got a way with words. Oh my gosh, he's better than me. You know, wow, he's fantabulous. Who is this guy? I want to know more about him. And so that's what I think every time I read your work. So, I mean, it's paid off what you've done. And so I would like to ask you now, kind of like what you're thinking. I have two questions before we wrap it up. Mm-hmm. One has to do with, you know, the world is in disarray, unraveling, mm-hmm. burning to the ground all around us. And it seems like there are more mentally ill people now, not just narcissists, but psychopaths, mm-hmm. sociopaths, borderline, manic depressive, schizophrenic, nuts.
Aggressive. There's more aggression.
Yes. Give me
covert
one.
And overt aggression. Covert
right.
and overt aggression.
I would like to know that. That's one question: is what do you think is going on there, and what can we do about it? And the second question is: what will be your next ventures? Your next ventures. Those two things. Let me start a new reel. Give me 2 seconds.
Sure. Yep.
Okay, we're back. Can you address the first one? What's going on in the world and what to do about this? There's so many people that seem just unhinged. What's wrong with them?
I think what's happened is there's been a cult of science that has supplanted, traditional beliefs, which not all of them were good. Not all of them were good. I think that probably we're comparing now to some kind of golden period, or maybe we're looking back, at a more stable and comfortable period. I would say the American Empire was very strong, and I would say now the American Empire is losing its power.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Religion has been kind of softened, or just kind of pushed to the side, and science is the religion. But it is failing us now. The religion we made with our hands is now failing us. It's not working. We're sort of quite separated from the natural world, and we become very impatient. We're not used to seasons and the rhythms and just how nature doesn't care about you, and it has rules, and you obey the rules, and you live. Like animals do. You obey the rules. Nature has rules. We have tried to bend these rules, perhaps a little much, and I think part of it is there's a blowback, and I think we have also tried to attack the animalistic or the whatever side of humans, and now there's a blowback from that. So it's kind of like it's the end of an era or an era. And so now we are, things are starting, the wheels are coming off. The wheels are just starting to come off. And, if you go back in time, so if you go back to England in the 15th century, the crime rate there was about 10 to 15 times what it is now. So, we are looking at things from a position of, I would say, the high tide of human comfort. We have experienced what I think is the high tide mark of human comfort and ease, and it's all downhill from here. We're going back to the past. That's my feeling. So probably human beings in the past were a lot more borderline, or, life would just look traumatic. You just never knew when, imagine being a medieval peasant. You just didn't know when some, you're an English peasant. You don't know when the French are going to come over and butcher you.
It was
You keep your ear to the ground, but you
yes, it
don't
was
know.
savage and barbarian, and so everybody had to be, built that way.
A neurotypical, I think, is a product of its time. I think that our empathy, the empathy of a neurotypical is too much, and people are empathizing. I don't know. I'm not saying don't save the whales, but I mean, now it's save everything. There's too much empathy, and I think that too much empathy becomes poisonous because, I don't know. It just seems like a strange world that there's all this empathy, and the empathy has become so much now. I think that now there's empathy for evil, and that's what we've done. We've now people have, large engorged sort of hyper, what's the word? Is it hypertrophy when it's far too large? Like empathy,
Yes.
there's too much empathy now. There's just too much empathy. And so, I think people will look back in the future and say, wow, what interesting brains they had those in that time. Like, I think neurotypical isn't typical historically speaking. So I think, yeah, we're coming out of the period of comfort, and we're returning back to a more animalistic lifestyle. Where we've just got to focus a little more on survival, and that's going to make people more aggressive. I guess also you have all the kind of bullshit that's kind of having its last gasp. People obsessed with their images, and there's a lot of that going on. So I guess that's the last kind of, that's the kind of extinction burst of the science cult,
Yes.
the worship of humanity and our power. So that's kind of what we're seeing is like everything kind of, you know, we're seeing like the tantrum. And then I think we will descend into a much more brutal, like, you know, we will descend into a much more brutal way of life.
So where does the cluster B person live in this new, more, you know, survivalist type of landscape where the time is spent not, you know, appearances and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, where is that person going to, are they going to thrive in that, or are they going to disappear and be?
I imagine, this is my theory, that, you know, everything is my theory, or the, I like to throw a bit of, you know, everything I do is my theory. I throw a bit of research and some life experience. I write Cluster B fan fiction, and you know, it's built up there. People who get angry with me, Cluster B fan fiction, but saying that, I think the Cluster B will do quite well. Maybe not so much the narcissist. I'm not sure how they'll do. I'm sure they'll find a way to toady, you know, to buddy up to somebody, kiss some ass and get some, you know, some things. But I think that if you are prepared to, as Cluster B are, to go further, to be more extreme, to risk, you know, maybe Cluster B, we act out because we are built for survival. And the world is no longer, you know, in the Western world, it's no longer really about survival. So we seek out, you know, maybe, perhaps this is a little bit tangential, maybe our Cluster B families punished us because they didn't really feel this was real. You know, they're just trying to keep it real with us. That's one thing.
Certainly
that comes
one
to
way
mind.
To think about that. I've not heard, you know, that theory that they're doing us
powers.
A favor.
Think about our fearlessness, you know, the fearlessness of the borderline or the psychopath. You know, one thing about Cluster B perhaps is the obsession and the kind of how we lock on to things and nothing else matters. Think of what the narcissist does, just the crazy shit they do, and they don't care. They just don't care. Or the borderline, you know, the crazy shit the borderline does. They don't care. They want to do what they want to do. And, this, you know, so I think that perhaps we are more suited to survival. I could be, you know, guessing, you know, I could be just fooling myself here. I mean, time will tell. But I feel that those of us who already live in a crazy world that's unstable, maybe we're gonna go, hey, this kind of feels like home here. Why do we seek out such crazy environments? What is it in us that goes, that person looks really nice, and their mum and dad have got a nice job, and everyone says nice stuff to each other. Fuck that. I'm off down the road. That person's exciting and flashy and kind of abusive. Let's have some fun together. You know, I don't know. Maybe we'll do well. Time will tell. Maybe in the past, post-traumatic stress disorder was just the order of the day. I don't know. And probably we clung to a God for all our life, with all our heart and all our soul, because there was no government to look after us. You know, there were no social services. There was hellfire, and there was the enemy, and there were witches and demons, and we just clung to our religion, and that's what we did. And we didn't want our God to abandon us. So
I have an heard people. Theory, but I have heard people say that, you know, the loss of belief in systems is what is making it where, as a human race, for the first time in history, we are in deep trouble. Because regardless of throughout history, whatever tumultuous thing we were facing, whatever horrible thing happened, systems were in place. There was religion. There were families. There were the things, you know, that people could turn to for strength and for anchors to steady them. And now all of these institutions no longer exist. Each person is really, you know, on their own.
I mean, maybe they exist, but they've kind of been hollowed out by various Cluster B miscreants and perverted for their own use. you know, maybe a long time ago, and I'm not going to name names, maybe a long time ago, people made medical products that would take 15 years to make because they're very dangerous, right? They would take 15 years because they're so dangerous. If you do it wrong, you kill a bunch of people. But nowadays, no, 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 we don't need to worry about that. We don't need to do things like that. We can do what we want. We're going to do it in 1 year. So I feel that the systems themselves have been hollowed out, and a lot of stuff that used to work has been thrown away because we are better. We're better than our ancestors, those stupid old fuddy-duddies. Stitch in time saves nine. No, it doesn't. You know what I mean? Like, we've thrown away. Rudyard Kipling has this fantastic poem called The Gods of the Copybook Headings. And a copybook was basically a twofer, that children would use it to practice their handwriting, but they would also, is the word, inculcate moral lessons. And so they would write all these things. You know, they would write, a stitch in time saves nine, and they would do it in cursive script, and that's how they would practice their handwriting.
Hundreds of times.
That's right. That's right. So not only would they learn moral lessons, which are perhaps just observations, perhaps there's no morality, but observation, perhaps nature is morality. And so, yeah, it's the most beautiful poem. And even back then, he saw what was going to happen. He observed what was going to happen. I'm sorry, I've lost my point.
No, it is a profound point that the future is most likely going to revert to the past, and that the paradigms will shift, and all of the things that matter the most to people now will be moot points that are just going to be left in the dust, like images and Instagram and, you know.
Gods. You know, isn't it interesting? You know, the Bible tells us not to worship idols, and yet, or images, you know, graven images. And yet now it's all about images. It's just there has become a proliferation of images, and we worship these images, you know, even so far as we have pictures in our mind of the narcissist and the wonderful time we had at that time, and we worship that image. So maybe to go back a little bit, maybe the reason, another reason that these things have been happening is that we are image worshippers now.
Mm-hmm. I think,
you know,
so.
We worship images with no substance.
It seems like those things will pass. It is something that must pass as our systems continue to fail, our education system, our healthcare system, our economy system. As these things one by one fail, then corporations can't, that's going to be a shift. The whole capitalistic agenda will have to be a shift. And what we have at the end of this, further down the road after war and climate change and food insecurity and, you know, all the things that are coming, will probably look quite different. And I have often wondered, how will all of the people who are mentally ill factor into this new world? Well, it seems there's more and more of them. So are we going to be in trouble because they're going to be running everything? Or
I've written a little thing I call The Wasteland. I did a little project back there. And I think that we assume there's going to be a gradual transition. If things get bad, we're going to gradually figure things out. But I would like to throw into the mix the fact that we now have the most or the least able to survive cohort of human beings are inhabiting this planet right now.
Yes.
I would much rather experience crisis with people who lived 100 years ago. They would know what to do.
Yes.
They would know exactly what to do. It would just be another day. But now we have a whole lot of people who live entirely based on somebody driving the food from the port to the supermarket and doing it on time. And all these things, it's very tenuous. We're living in a very tenuous situation where if things were to go wrong, it will be unlike anything we have ever seen before.
Because
we are going to have
helpless. We're helpless.
Yes, and then we're going to have a lot of frightened people, and frightened people are very dangerous.
Yes.
It's very, very dangerous. Much like trying to save the drowning person, they're just going to pull you down. You know, there's going to be panicked people. I feel that us mentally ill people, it's like another day at the office. You know what I mean? It's just another day at the office.
I do think that the narcissist, psychopath, sociopath have this fearless quality and this delusional reality that will allow them to survive in ways that other people will not. They will crumble. Oh, they will be frightened.
And the borderline. Big props to the borderline.
Yes.
There's a bit of research out there showing that it's not the primary psychopath who is fearless. It's the secondary psychopath. It's the anxious psychopath.
Yes. I wrote an article not that long ago that said when all of this is said and done, the only ones that will survive will be the cluster B and cockroaches.
Yeah, I think so. I think that that fearlessness of, you know, the cluster B fearlessness, if pointed in the right way, is really something that's going to get us through. Those of, you know, I don't know if I'm a borderline, I just kind of feel an affinity to it, perhaps to the more masculine form, perhaps. Sam Vaknin did a really good video on covert and overt borderline. So yes. There's a more masculine form. Sorry, don't let me go on too long. Now I'm getting my rant on.
Before you get your rant on, and I want to say,
this
has been such a great conversation. I would like to do a second installment and have another interview here while. But I want to end with this. We have about 5 minutes, and I would like for you to share with us some ideas, projects, things that you would like to do or see happen or complete or work on, or your passion projects, just some of kind of what interests you that keeps you busy and keeps you sane right now with everything happening the way it is. What are you up to?
Well, at the moment here in New Zealand, it's spring. Well, no, okay, it's not quite spring, but it's kind of, we're looking like we might have an early spring. So being someone apocalypse-minded and unabashed about that, I am putting in a garden. I've got about an eighth of an acre, which I intend to plant up. It's not particularly good soil, so I'm going to have to work on that. What else? In terms of Quora, I'm starting a new project I just called The Restaurant at the End of the Universe. I was hoping to kind of just to be a showcase of the people of Quora, the people I've interacted with. And I think I was inspired by this comedian, Theo Von, who did a series of interviews of just, you know, kind of everyday people, but kind of interesting everyday people, truckers and all sorts of jobs, which I kind of thought was cool. I mean, I will interview. I wouldn't mind interviewing Sophia Bell if she's got the time. If she can put down, you know, if she'd get off the beach, put down the bloody cocktails, maybe give us a ring. And Mac Davidson, I've got a lot of respect for Mac. I suggest people read him too. Fantastic. And some others. But, yeah, I just want to, yeah, I mean, we'll see how we go. I just want to get people's opinions because I feel that everyone's got something to say. And if we go the road less travel, we might get stuff that's more interesting. So that's a kind of an idea I had. I just want to talk to some people that I've talked to on Quora and just kind of explore their experiences and how they've seen narcissism. You know, I not so much my narcissist, quote unquote, but just, you know, what have you learned from this experience of narcissism? They're kind of all the same, I kind of think. They're just in different bodies. They're all the same person in a different body, and they make do with what they've been given, but it's the same kind of modus operandi. Don't think they're particularly interesting in and of themselves.
Right. And I
except
think
as humorous anecdote is probably the best thing to use a narcissist for, humorous anecdote.
I think that it has a lot to do with what stage that you're in after you have been tangled up with this, whether it was a parent or a partner, and whether you're freshly out of it and standing there trying to figure out what the hell just happened to you, or whether you know what it is and you've been living with the knowledge of it for a while and you're still trying to make sense of what that's going to look like in your future. I mean, I think that that has more to do with it because people know what their experience is, but they're not ready to put that together and make sense of it. I think it's a long process. I don't think it's something we come to quickly, right?
I mean, perhaps we just have different dispositions, and so all of us need to strengthen or just be wary of our weaknesses, which might be all different. You know what I mean? Like, you know, so some people may end up in a narcissistic relationship for longer, and that's what that is. But other people may not be in relationships with anyone, yet they may do dangerous things, or they may be in relationships that are not romantic, but they're still doing dangerous things, things that are not to their long-term benefit. So, you know, I feel that, yeah, so it's different for everyone. Some people end up in long-term relationships, and I haven't so far, but I've had some long-term friendships with people I feel, you know, could have been like that. And, yeah, we're all in different places, and we do the best we can. We just have different temperaments. And so, you know, some of us need to do different things to protect ourselves, I think, you know, protect ourselves and then get on with our life as best we can.
Yes,
and,
I think
do the things that we love.
A collaborative effort to come together and be collegial and collaborative and share can strengthen us. I think that, like we spoke of earlier, it's important to be alone and be okay with being alone.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
there is strength in numbers and opening up someone else's thoughts and digging around.
You gotta bring something to the table, though. You know what I mean? Like, otherwise, you're getting cluster B. You know,
yes,
if you're just going to go into that group with the intent of taking, I think it's not good. So that's why I think the alone time is essential. I'm reminded of Joseph Campbell talking about the belly of the beast. We've all got to do it. We've all got to go into the belly of our, you know, the belly of the beast. So I think it's important to be collaborative, but also to balance that with doing one's own thing. I'm not into groups for the sake of groups. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I do.
You know, people on Quora who approach me and I rebuff them because it just messes with my head. I would, you know, I want to do my thing. And then I would like to sometimes, like with yourself, you know, you've put forth effort, you've written something, you know, you're on Medium, you're writing polished articles, you've started a podcast, and for that reason I'm talking with you. You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
not totally transactional, but to some extent it is. You've been respectful to me always. You know what I mean? So I think this is a person I can deal with.
Yes.
This is someone I can deal with. We will have good transactions.
We
they
can
will be
learn
good.
From
they
each
will not
other.
Be
we can learn from each
yeah.
other and
well,
give each other something to chew
word.
On. Yes.
Yeah,
I want to understand.
Yeah, but you have gone by yourself and you know, you've faced the pain and the fear and the frustration and the humiliation of being alone and going, how do I do this? I don't know how to do this. How do I do this?
Yes.
And so I have respect for you, and I think this is a person I can deal with. They're not going to try and take from me, you know. They're going to try and deal with me, and I feel respected that we can have an exchange of goods and services and goodwill. And neither of us is going to fleece the other.
Yes.
Although I must say that I'm being cluster B. You did say half an hour, and I'm pushing the boundary because I'm a cluster B.
I thought it was well worth it to go a little bit over. So I will
okay.
I will put the pieces together. There may be a little hiccup in the middle around the 30-minute mark where we lose a sentence or two, but it will work.
Yep.
And I think we have a lot of great things we have talked about. And I'm excited for whatever continued projects or things that we can work on together. I would love to have another conversation with you here. I think that people like to entertain new ideas and new ways of thinking about things because what's happening right now all around us demands that. And
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so, but I would also like to put a plug out for not networking. I'm a big fan of not networking. I'm a big fan of David Goggins, and I think to some extent people need to get out there and do it like you have.
Yes.
They need to get out there and do it. You know what I mean? Like, that's the biggest problem. with cluster B and the codependent is they essentially want to find somebody that they can look into their eyes 24/7 and unconditional love will radiate back and forward, like some kind of benevolent plant.
Yeah.
A couple of benevolent pot plants. That's not life. We've got to go out there and be alone sometimes. And I think the both of them are important, not in some arbitrary 50-50 mix, but whatever it is to you, you know, whatever suits you. Some of us work with people, others don't. But I think that, yeah, I think, you know, we need to be alone and then we come together. It should not be all alone. That's a bit boring. But all together, I think you just end up in power struggles. That's all. It just ends up in a power struggle.
Yes.
So it's good to keep it. I feel like it's good to keep, you know, it's good to keep it in a sort of a transactional nature. Dare I use the word? And I will. You know, keep it at fair dealings. We might call it not transactions, but we've got to deal fairly with each other. And I think, you know, so that's really, if I can leave a last word to everyone, I just suggest, and I often say it seems a bit tongue-in-cheek or a bit cruel, but I say get a hobby. Get a hobby. You know, your narcissist this, your narcissist that. How about you get a hobby so you've got something else to think about?
Yes.
So that you're not sitting there ruminating, creating ruts in your brain about the narcissist. At least have something to triangulate them with, even if it's stamp collecting. Not that anyone sends them anymore. That's going to make it harder for you, so that's probably good. So I just suggest to everyone, if I'm allowed to have a little plug here, it's just get a hobby. Get something else to think about. The narcissist is brain damaged. They are brain damaged. There's nothing you can do except hurt yourself. So if I can leave you with some last
abrasive words. Yes, that's the wisest thing you could possibly say about, you know, you're trying to do something with a person that is brain damaged. So you have to get something else.
Yep.
And, you know, right now, considering everything that's going on, I might say, in closing, that apocalypse garden sounds like a really good idea for people to think about.
Have an apocalypse, I don't know, an apocalypse tomato plant and a pot plant in your little apartment. If you live in, you know, somewhere in the 15th floor or the 58th floor and somewhere in New York, you can do it. Everyone can do it. Everyone can have an apocalypse garden or garden lit. And I think the hobby should be not ruminating on one's narcissist solely. Sure, learn about narcissism, learn about NPD, but have another hobby that's not narcissism related, something mm-hmm. you can lose yourself, particularly in nature or with objects. I think it's lovely to play with objects, you know, get into gravity, nature, mediums, you know, wood, textiles, whatever it is.
Yes.
Get a hobby, people. Get a hobby, empaths. Get a hobby.
Okay, well, thank you, Robert Torbay, for a wonderful conversation. It went very quickly, and I hope we have given people something to think about besides their narcissist. And I look forward to speaking to you again.
Yes, and it's not their narcissist. All of your narcissists belong to me. I could walk right in there and take them right off you. I'll snatch them. I'll snatch easy. So easy.
Yes.
So easy.
There's so much truth in that. All right. Well, thank you, Robert, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you. I enjoyed that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.